The Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny is presented for the people by Caesars Sportsbook. You bet, you get with Caesars Rewards. Must be 21 or older.
Welcome back to Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where one of the hosts thinks the pocket is where you keep treats. That's Lenny. I'm Mina Kimes. Speaking of treats, this is one of my favorite pods to do for every draft. I think we've done it for a couple years now. Here to help me discuss the top defensive prospects in the draft this season, guys who are likely to go in the first round, maybe the second, Deonte Lee, welcome back to the show.
Glad to be back. Yeah, I think you're right. This is year three or year four, maybe, of me being on the show to talk defensive prospects. And I will say, not to accuse you of dropping clunkers of puns for the intro, but I have not experienced a miss yet. So I'm happy for that. I can take
had a lot of misses. I've had a lot of misses, a lot of repeats, but I don't keep track of them. So I don't know if I am. Hopefully fewer misses than teams have picking edge rushers in the draft. Yeah. Because ahead of this podcast, I went back and I looked at the last few years and I was shocked by how many misses that there have been. So I want to revisit that. You guys know, by the way, Deonte's work from The Athletic. You can follow him on Twitter at Deonte Lee FB. But before we get into defense, which is what we're here to talk about today, very important story that kind of has a chokehold on me that I do want to address with you, which is draft related. Okay, so Albert Breer, Sports Illustrated, reports a fascinating detail. The Commanders are hosting LSU quarterback Jaden Daniels, North Carolina's Drake May, J.J. McCarthy of Michigan, and Washington quarterback Michael Penix on their 30 visits together tonight and tomorrow. I am choosing to believe that they are all visiting at the same time. I am thinking of this as a quarterback group date. It is very funny. I think Nikki, who covers the Commanders, also reported that Josh Harris, the owner, will be observing the process, which again adds to the reality TV show feel of it all. Deonte, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. I will say I'd like to give my analysis as somebody who has watched almost every season of The Bachelor and The Bachelorette and knows
you undercut my take. That's where I was going.
You watch the show? I forget. Do you watch these shows?
I haven't watched maybe the last two seasons, but when we were, funnily enough, when I was working in education, we would watch that in class all the time. I promise there's some educational value in that. This was not just like rolling out the old TV on, you know, a random Friday to pass by time, but we used to watch it all the time in that class. So it kind of got me hooked for a little bit.
So you've seen group dates, you know,
of course,
how they go. What it takes to succeed on them. I think there's a lot to learn for these quarterbacks. I'll say this. It's a fine balance because you want to be good in a group setting. You want to get along with everyone. And I have to think that they're going to be watching for that. This is the NFL. So they're probably watching to see who the alpha is. Yes, so you know, if like you're sitting down, J.J. McCarthy might be the one to do the toast first or, you know, place the order first. I'm just saying. But you also want to make sure that you don't have to pull the lead. In this case, I guess it would be the GM and Adam Peters. But you got to have like some moments with him. Because I've noticed from watching group dates on The Bachelor, whenever they really pick someone, it's often – well, they reveal something like devastating. So I guess you could do that too. But it's often they'll say like, "Hey, I could just tell we had a few moments. Right. You know, we made eye contact. Yes. You made it clear why you were here." So I think that they have to go into this meeting balancing those things of the group, but also catering just a little bit to the decision makers.
I love the way you're framing this. Like, I was very, very obsessed with Perfect Match when it first aired on Netflix. And like, they would always just talk like in these ethereal terms, like the connection and the vibe and the energy. Right. So I would love to hear that in football terms. And to your point with The Bachelor, right, there's always somebody who's going to be performative and over the top. And I would like to, you know, play that game in my head of J.J. McCarthy being the one who, you know, let me leave. I want to leave the table in prayer and I'm going to make the toast. And, you know, and similarly, there's always somebody in the group date setting that like completely melts down, who just cannot handle the fact that attention is not being paid to them. And I would love to see who that is, who walks off the set, pulls the microphone off, goes to the Escalade to be taken back to the airport so they can go home. I would love to know how that plays out. We definitely need confessionals coming out of this.
I would love the Washington social team to give us content. They will not give us content, but I really, really, really wish this was being streamed. One more thing is I did post, there's this I Think You Should Leave skit, making fun of The Bachelor, sort of satirizing it, where Tim Robbins' character is the guy who's clearly just there because he wants to do the zip line. So I posted, which quarterback is this, with the image of him on the zip line. And everybody, almost everybody, well, there was a bit of Drake May, and I think that's just because he has kind of a goobery vibe.
Yes.
A lot of people said Michael Penix Jr. because he knows he's not the pick at two. So he's just there, you know, for the
I'm here for the champagne, you know, and all the hors d'oeuvres. And yeah, I'm going to get on the zip line. And when we have our competition period, where I'm going to be the one who's going to cause a problem between all the other contestants, because I know I'm not getting a rose at the end of this episode anyways. So what difference does it make to me?
He's just there to get on Bachelor in Paradise. Very funny. It does seem increasingly like the Commanders are locked in on Jaden Daniels at two as every day goes by. But I will get into that in more detail next week, right before the draft, just going through the biggest questions ahead of the first round. But I guess one of the questions is how many defensive players will actually get taken, Deontay, because I've been doing all these mocks with folks, and I actually should go back through and try to average out how many offensive players go. It's a lot. Yeah. And I do think it's possible that we might see a record-breaking offensive draft. I asked Stats and Info what the record was, and I believe they said it was 19 in the first round for offense. I think it's very plausible that, given obviously four quarterbacks likely, probably at least six wide receivers, Brock Bowers, 10 plus. I just had Booger on. He took like 11 offensive linemen, I think. That seems plausible. So defense, this is not a, it's not a very strong defensive draft, I think, but I think a lot of it more has to do just with the caliber of offensive players. I do think, however, because very few defensive players will be taken, especially in the first half, a lot of teams that need defense will really have their pick of players, and that makes it exciting to me for them.
I agree. Like, you know, to the point you're making about how many defensive players are going to be drafted, I was talking with Robert Mays about that on his podcast, and I think I have maybe like 8 to 12 guys that I would say solidly have first round grades on the defensive end, and that's really light. And then to your point, not only is this not the greatest defensive class and a lot of guys being pushed back to day two because of how heavy it is on wide receiver, offensive lineman, quarterback, and so forth, this is also unique in the fact that I think there's a pretty clear threshold on players that you can reasonably expect to be difference makers on rookie contracts on the defensive side of the ball. So I think that what we're going to be primed for is a ton of movement on day two. You know, obviously there's plenty of trade discussions about what's going to go on at the top of the first round of the draft. But I think day two, when you get to round two and round three, there are going to be a lot of teams who needed to take a tackle or needed to take a wide receiver or needed to take an interior offensive lineman day one, but also have to address something on the defensive side of the ball, right? Whether it's taking a swing on a corner, taking a swing on an edge, there's a lot of defensive tackles that teams should be interested in this class as well that are day two guys. So it's going to be really fascinating to me to see how the first round kind of influences what we see in round two and round three of the draft.
Well, we're going to start by talking about edge. Mm-hmm. I do anticipate probably 3 or 4 edge rushers going in the first round. For the most part, it feels like there's a top tier of Dallas Turner, Laiu Tulatu, Jared Verse. I've seen everybody put them in different orders. Chop Robinson is a guy who I see in a lot of first-round mocks. So we'll talk about him as well in this group. And then Darius Robinson out of Mizzou was probably the most surprising name when Adam Schefter posted the list of guys who are going to the draft. I think it was 13 players, and all 12 of the 13, I was like, yeah. Whoa, okay. Darius Robinson. Right. Right. Makes you think he got some intel, maybe, or maybe he wants to have the experience. But what he did do was get himself talked about on this podcast. So we will talk about him a little bit. But I want to start with the top three, I guess top four. I think for me, the biggest question is whether Dallas Turner deserves to be obvious consensus number one. I think he's gone to Atlanta in almost every mock I've done. Everybody, that's one of those picks, kind of like the Titans taking offensive linemen, that feels written in stone, right, almost. Right. So let's just start there and talk about Turner. Like, do you agree? How do you view him as a prospect? How do you view him relative to the other big two, so to speak?
I would say Turner, Jared Verse, and Laiatu Latu are all top 15 guys to me. And I think that people have just kind of shoehorned him into to Atlanta because they need a speed rush type, I think. I think that people, especially Falcons fans, are probably just desperate to see that team add some edge talent, right? And he happens to just be the best player physically that fits in what they want to do defensively.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I see the case for him.
For sure.
I guess I went back and forth, and I think maybe I went on Brett Coleman's podcast, and I think I said, like, Latu is like my heart, but Turner is my head as the edge rusher run. And I think it's because the reasons why you would go Turner over Latu are very logical. First and foremost, age. And this Latu and Verse are both over 23. They're going to be 24-year-old rookies, I think. Turner is only 21 years old. He's very young. He's extremely athletic. He crushed the combine, and that athleticism really shows up on tape. He's got an excellent first step. His closing speed is outrageous. His burst, he's explosive. It's all there. He's a little bit on the smaller side, and I think that shows up in the run, but he's got a really big wingspan, and so his comparables are really appealing. I think they're pretty comparable to Brian Burns. I was looking at his mock draftable chart. What he doesn't have is the same production, and, you know, which isn't to say, like, he had 10 sacks. He's not like this is not Chop Robinson. It's not all projection.
Right. It's not Trevon Walker from a couple years ago either, right?
Well, when you compare him to Latu, he's clearly significantly less refined as a pass rusher, but I think you can explain it away as, okay, well, he's young, he's developing. The other thing I would add is, and I think we saw that with Anderson Jr., different things are asked of him in Alabama's offense. You know, it's not the same with Latu, where it's just like, cut him loose and let him get after the quarterback all the time. Right. And he's a very gap sound player because he was asked to be. And so I think I sound kind of like damning with faint praise, maybe a little bit. And I'm not, I really like him as a prospect. I don't think he's like a home run.
Right.
There's part of me that does still prefer Latu because of the tape, but I understand the case for taking Turner over Hurst overall.
To me, that's really what it comes down to, right? Is that Turner is a late breakout, which is always kind of like a yellowish flag when you're talking about, you know, top 10 picks, right? Guys who didn't really break out until their last year. I will say what works in his favor with that is that he's not a 6-year, you know, COVID hardship type of guy where he's 23, 24 years old, right? I think he won't be 22 until after day one of the draft, if I remember right. So you would be drafting him on the right side of his development curve, right? You've got a guy who's got the longest arms of the top three, almost 34 and a half inch arms, basically. Most explosive, like you said, best top end speed. You look at the explosiveness scores, it's all there. He does have a great first step. I think that what's going to trip people up is exactly what you noted, which is that when you turn on Latu's film, you can see very instantly, like, okay, this is the kind of pass rusher he's going to be in the league. It's going to translate basically one for one in terms of being a hand fighter, being able to work different angles, somebody that you can move around the line of scrimmage and be productive. Whereas with Turner, I do think there's a little bit more of that kind of old school 3-4 outside backer, you know, playing a 9 technique. And we want this guy to be a speed rusher with long arms, and we'll kind of add weight to him so that way he can set edges a little bit better, right? So there is some reason, I think, to ask questions about exactly what you're going to get immediately. I think that with Turner, when you consider what edge rusher can be in a league where more than ever you've got to be able to get home with four, you're going to want a guy that has that kind of profile athletically to be a speed rusher, and somebody who is competitive in the run game, even if he does not necessarily have the body type right now to just own every tight end that he lines up over the top of.
Yeah. And I want to say, like, it's not like, I feel like I was like, the production's not there. I meant like for a first edge rusher.
Exactly.
Right. Like he gets to the quarterback, and I mean, I'm just looking at my notes from watching him. You do see like a fair amount of moves on tape. He's got a really nice stab.
Yep.
Counter moves. The long arm is good. The footwork is good on counters. He's, I really like, some of his inside moves. So I think it's to your point, like, it's just hard when you watch Latu where right. it's like, pass rushing wise, Latu is like, I don't know, like the Harvard University versus right. like, gosh, I can't come up with an analogy that doesn't sound horribly snobby there. So I'm gonna fail that midstream. But
Ivy Elite.
Okay, let me do a redo on this analogy. I don't know enough about fighting. I was gonna like compare it to like a fighter, like Lot, but that's what Latu looks like. He looks like
right.
a fighter out there. It's just he's just so. If you like pass rush moves, you should watch his tape. It's so fun. I mean, and let me just read you some of the stats from this mm-hmm. season. First in sacks created, second in overall pressure rate over 20%.
2 years in a third, row, over 20% too.
That's right. So he's been amazing for 2 years. First pressures, he ranks third overall. I mean, it across the board, his pass rush wins, all of it. It's phenomenal, and they're not like cheap sacks either. Right. Like when you watch them or pressures, he wins all the time. His tape, I mentioned versus USC a lot, but also just, I mean, he just ripped through the Pac-12. The Colorado exactly. game is. What he did yeah. to Colorado, again, like USC, not the greatest offensive line, and I think a quarterback who maybe invites pressure, but it is like I had to smoke a cigarette after watching it. I smoke cigarettes. I mean, it is really something to behold. You see literally every kind of move on tape. The question, of yeah. course, is the medicals. You know, he is a player who thought he had to leave football after his. He got injured at UW, and then he was mm-hmm. medically cleared, came back, which is obviously great for him. It was a neck injury, pardon me, but concerning for NFL prospects. And then I think there's questions on ceiling with regards to athleticism, size, arm length, that kind of thing. So it's an interesting debate, right? Because it's right. kind of like a philosophical one. Like this, it invites like a big picture question of like, how high can you draft like an extremely technically refined pass rusher, knowing that perhaps there might be a ceiling on him for those reasons?
I agree. Like to me, the joke I've been making with Latu is like, you know how every summer, like four or five wide receivers get together in the summer and there's all yeah. those IG drills and you hear the yeah. oos, 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 and all the footwork stuff, right? You know, and everybody reposted on Twitter like, oh my gosh, Jerry Jeudy's going to be a problem in 2023 or whatever the case may be, right? Like Latu's tape is reminiscent of that in the sense of like, you can tell he has worked on every pass rush move that has ever existed, right? And he is able to employ them. And that to me is what's most impressive, right? You talk about counters, talk about using your hands, understanding how to set up moves with your feet and create angles. For me, like someone who exists in the coaching world, I have that same feeling of like, man, if I could just get a player to learn two of these things,
yeah,
they would be great, you know? And this guy has this full repertoire. So that's what's impressive to me. And then you hit on the things that I just feel like, to be fair, we have to keep an eye on. A is a medical retirement. Now, we won't know what the status of his medicals are as NFL analysts until he's in the league, right? Like, we haven't heard anything up to this point, but we know that it's something that is on everybody's radar. And, you know, I think people have drawn comparisons to Jalen Phillips. Obviously, you know, another UCLA product who ended up going to Miami before he kind of, you know, was medically reinstated and then kind of broke out. I don't know if I would be comfortable using Phillips as a comparison point beyond just the fact that he went from being medically retired to reinstated, because Phillips is so much more explosive, right? Like, he has a different level of length. He has a different level of first step. Yeah. You know, how Phillips plays against the run is a little bit different than Latu. Not to say that Latu is a poor run defender, but I would say that if there is something to poke a hole in his game, I think it's fair to ask, like, hey, a guy with 32-inch arms, but over 250 pounds, why is it that you get moved as often as you do, right? So that's fair to ask those questions. But he brings a lot to the table, right? There's a lot of pure pass rush, high floor type of thing. But to me, because he doesn't have those 35-inch arms like Dallas Turner is close to, because he's not a sub-4.6 guy or a sub-1.6 10-yard split guy, he didn't run the three cones, so we don't know what those times are. But when you watch, you can kind of see some things in terms of contact balance and a lack of bend, especially at 6'5", where you could probably guess that that's not like a sub-7-second three cone, right? So you do have some questions about, is this going to be a guy who's just going to be a high motor, hand fighting type of pass rusher who's maybe like a number two in an ideal situation? And it's not that there's anything wrong with that. Chances are most of the edges that hit are going to be more of your number two guys. It's really rare to come across that all pro number one type of edge rusher. But I do think that athletically, you do have to ask those questions about whether or not the fact that he's kind of looks like a maxed out prospect means that he's not going to give you much more or be able to replicate what he's done at in the college level once he gets to the pros.
And this is why being a GM is really hard, because essentially the question we're posing is, would you rather take the player with the lower floor and the higher ceiling, or the player who I really believe you can come in, he can produce at the NFL level, especially if, to your point, he lands on a team where he is paired with another good to great pass rusher. If he gets one-on-ones, like, he will win against a lot of offensive tackles in the NFL, especially if they're put on an island. And I think, so to that end, like, it is a little bit also about, like, okay, what kind of team do we have? What kind of defensive line do we have already? Do we really need to take swings? And then, of course, how do you project these other players? Because they're flawed as well. I mean, we talked about Turner. The other guy who's in this group, Jared Verse, I view Chubb below them. So I just want to be clear. Yeah, same, to Chubb. Okay. Same. So, you know, Verse is also an older prospect. He gives you much more, obviously, power, strength, athleticism. I mean, he's a freak. Like, he's just so big and strong. And I guess I have 6'4 written. He looks taller on the field.
Yeah, I think he's 6'4. Yeah, 6'4, 250. I think looks is how bigger, he weighed in.
Bigger than that. He plays bigger. I mean, he's got the best bull, the best forklift. The amount of power he generates from his lower body is insane. And it's a shame that it's not shame, but the FSU, the chop that they do, it's problematic, but that literally is his pass rush move. I keep coming up with these like problematic analogies, but when I watch him, okay, let me again, take another stab at it. He looks like a machine with like two, like if you built a robot and then just put two machetes for arms and it was just like this.
I was gonna say like those old like action figures and dolls that can only do one move and you're just flicking the button on the back and they're just
But literally he has maybe the most violent cross chop I've seen from a prospect in some time. It's his move, but it works. And that and the bull in the long arm, I think, is pretty effective. I mean, I enjoyed watching him a lot. I think he's got a lot of speed at his size too. I guess my question for you is, like, how do you view him relative to the other two? And do you feel like he has maybe the upside that teams might be concerned about with Latu?
See, and this is the thing that I love about this, about the top three of this edge class, right? Is that the player archetypes are distinct.
Yeah.
So there's really a choose your own adventure type of quality when you're talking about this position. To me, Verse kind of lands right in between the two of them. I would say he's definitely the best run defender of the three right now. That strength is very apparent when it comes to setting edges, when it comes to controlling a gap. right? That's very apparent on tape. That combination of speed and power and that conversion of speed to power is also apparent on tape. I've compared him to Trent Cole, you know, old Philadelphia Eagles edge rusher, guy that can probably add more weight and be even more powerful once he gets to the league, right? And then I've also compared him to like Will Anderson Light, right? There's a lot of like diet Will Anderson to his game when it comes to, hey, this is not a guy who's going to have this large repertoire of pass rush moves, right? A lot of it is going to be based off the threat of a bull rush. A lot of it is going to be based off the threat, like you said, of your cross chop, of your forklift moves, things that are very power centric and really leaning on high motor and that ability to always be crushing the pocket, right? Always affecting the quarterback, even if it's not a clear pass rush win. And that's not to say that he's not productive. I would just say that if you look at the data, it probably pops the least over, you know, especially last season. But it doesn't take away from who he is as a prospect. He kind of checks all the boxes in a way that makes you feel comfortable with having him as an edge on your team, while also to the point of kind of damning with faint praise, not necessarily profiling as a guy that, you know, blows you away, right? But I think that's a guy who can play in any scheme, in any kind of defense, fit any role from being, you know, your hand in the dirt.
I was going to say, would you see him? Could you see him standing up?
I could, probably not as well as Turner or Latu, but I think that he could do it if you needed to. I do think, right, to me, if you're, let's say you're Washington and Minnesota is actually desperate to get up to two, and you feel like, oh, I'll move back and go get a guy like that and have him play in Dan Quinn's defense where he can put his hand down and play more, you know, power penetration, go make plays in the backfield, stop the run on the way to the quarterback. That, I think, would be a very comfortable fit for him. But I do think he can do at least a little bit of everything.
Actually, let's use what I think is a very realistic scenario, which is Seattle at pick 16. There's a very good chance both Latu and Verse are available there, as well as the defensive tackles that we're going to talk about earlier. So if Seattle doesn't go interior offensive line, they will have their choice of some pretty interesting defensive prospects. But just focusing on the edges, new defensive coordinator Mike McDonnell, you have Chenna Nwosu coming back from injury, you got Leo Williams and Draymond Jones on the inside. There's actually some talent on the defensive line. Do you think Latu or Verse is a better fit for Mike McDonald's defense?
I think that Verse is the better fit player-wise for the defense. When I think about the guys that they played on the edge, it was, you know, in Baltimore, I should say, it was Jadeveon Clowney, it's Kyle Van Noy, right? You have Odafe Owe. These are powerful guys, right? These are powerful guys on the edge, guys who can set edges. And I think last year, and I think part of this is personnel dependent, but last year you saw, I think, a little bit less of dropping these guys out in the coverage outside of Kyle
Van Noy.
Just about
to ask that because,
and a little bit more of just playing downhill, rushing
forward. Latu would be better at that.
Exactly, exactly. So that's kind of where I'm at. Who knows, right? Mike McDonald is not really committed to any one thing defensively in terms of identity since he's taken the job. So there is kind of some, I think, some wish casting from people in terms of assuming that it's going to be just like Baltimore.
I'm hit. I have sort of come around and agree with you. I would be excited about both, honestly, just because I think both really cool players, and I'd be excited to see what McDonald does with them. But I do think Seattle's run defense really suffered in the second half of last season. And a big part of the reason why, super underrated, was losing Chenna Nwosu, who's obviously, you think he's an edge, he's a pass rusher, but they just couldn't set an edge. And so I think the power that Verse gives you and how stout he is against the run would solve some of the problems that you had there.
And then you think stylistically, not to cut you off, but you think stylistically, right? Like Mike McDonald likes to change the picture and play zone coverage on the back end, right? And he wants to get home with four. And to me, if you're going to do that in the league, you do need guys who can stop the run, right? You're going to use more of like pass rushing in waves, trying to get, you know, pass rush from the interior. That's what Leonard Williams and Draymond Jones are there for, right? And being able to use a combination of edge rushers and twists and stunts and, you know, simulated pressures and the like to be able to affect the quarterback. To me, if that's the world that you want to live in, and I do think that's something that fits Seattle pretty comfortably, given how much they've invested over the years at corner, just at defensive back in general, I can see them leaning more in that direction if they are going to go edge and not safety with the number 16 pick.
Safety at 16.
There's a guy that I think we'll get to.
I will lose it if they take it a safety at 16.
There's a guy that we'll get to that I think would check the box, and that being Cooper DeGene. And
I was just about to say, that's a little different because the actual safeties.
Yes. Oh no, if it was like Tyler Newbin, I would say John Schneider, you're on the clock, buddy.
He might be. Really quickly though, we should talk about the two Robinsons. So Chop, he is like really your prototypical like. Maybe guy, four sacks, incredible. I mean, he's super athletic. His get off is amazing. His bend is amazing. The traits are amazing. But I just feel like the recent history of guys like this is not good, dude. Like, when was the last time an edge rusher drafted in the first couple of rounds with that kind of profile turned into something?
You would have to go back a while. And honestly, that's really never been the MO, right, of teams building or finding premium edge rushers. It's very rare that you go get a lighter built guy, somebody who's not great against the run. And I think that there are some Chop Robinson fans who try to explain away some of that stuff. If you watch the tape, to me, the first thing I noticed was, he's always on the weak side. He is always away from where the point of attack is going to be. He's always on the open side of the formation. He's always on the boundary. And when he does land over a tight end, it rarely looks like a guy that you can even project and say is going to be a legitimate edge setter at the NFL level, right? And now we're talking designated pass rush guys. You know, Will McDonald was a pick for the Jets, right? That kind of profile similarly. You have Boye Mafe, right? Speaking of Seattle, who was like a, twitchy designated pass rush guy. In recent memory, these guys, it's really difficult, I think, to get them to be able to fit the modern context of NFL defense right now. And I don't know if I'd be comfortable with taking a guy that's that much of a coin flip, and maybe even worse odds than a coin flip on whether or not he hits and is a guy that you can play, on an every down basis or on base downs, period.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind like a team that already has set D-line taking him in the second round is like a high upside. Let's see if we can develop him play. But first round, I don't really see it. I feel the same way about Robinson, who obviously a very, very different sort of player. He is 6'5", 285. Kind of reminds me of Keon White, the Patriots defensive end. Got some
almost like identical measurables.
Really? Physically? Actually. Okay.
Yeah, I think they're both came in between 285, 290. Both have like 34 and a half inch arms.
Keon was a second round pick, right?
Right. Yeah.
So, I wouldn't mind Robinson going there as well. I mean, he's the athleticism, the strength, unreal. He will win with power. He's good against the run. He's just not like a first round pass rusher to me. So I just don't really see it that way.
Same. When you brought him up, wanting to discuss him, I went back and rewatched, and I definitely underrated his power, right? There is some legitimate body moving happening when he puts his hands on guy. I mean, just watching him against Georgia and he's walking guys back. It's like, okay. Like, I probably undersold what you were from a power perspective, but yeah, he's a tweener, which automatically makes it an issue. You don't see a lot of those like true 3-4 odd fronts or the old school like Tampa Bay 4 down where you're going to put a 280 pound edge out expecting him to rush the passer. So that's a question mark for me. And then to me, it's like he's better against the run right now than he is against the pass. It's not like Tyree Wilson, where it's like, all right, you got this big oversized guy, but you can tell first step is legitimate and there might be enough there in terms of hand fighting that would, profile well in terms of rushing the passer. I don't know if I see that. So, yeah, I would say second round, a guy that you can maybe move around, play three tech notes sometimes, play as like your big kind of five technique in base packages, outside of a tackle, inside of the tight end, if you're going to load the box up a little bit more. That makes more sense, but you don't take guys like that with the top 32 picks in the NFL draft.
Let's talk about the defensive tackles. This is really a two-player tier one. I think that's almost universally agreed upon. Yeah. Byron Murphy out of Texas and Johnny Newton out of Illinois. I actually was surprised they're really about the same size.
Yeah.
I love Newton. So I want to be clear. We're going to talk about him. I love the player. He's one of my favorite players to watch. But, you know, for a team like Seattle potentially, or the Rams at 19, or Cincinnati at 18, if you're taking you know, a three tech there, in Murphy, I think you do have the advantage of just how stout he is against the run. I mean, that dude has like an unmovable lower half. How do you view these two? Do you view these two players in any particular order, or do you see them the way I do, which is like pretty close with a slight edge to Murphy?
They're very close. I give Murphy the edge because of what he is athletically. And part of that might be unfair because we didn't get to see Johnny Newton test right at the combine, recovering from a procedure on his foot, if I remember right. So, you know, he missed some of the pre-draft process. So if we had numbers, I might feel a little bit differently. But then you do turn on the tape. And like you said, I mean, not only does Murphy have the strength that you noted, I was telling Robert when I was on the podcast with him, like, they're just like two or three clips a game where he'll just put an arm on the chest of a guard, and he's just walking guys into the lap of the quarterback. And that's something that is immediately going to pop for you when you're talking about interior rush potential. And that's something that I think that Murphy has now that Newton, I think, while he is pretty powerful, and a guy that you can maybe move around a little bit in terms of playing the nose, playing three technique, moving him out, playing more odd front stuff. I do think that there's something there for him, you know, with Newton. But I think there's a force of nature element that you get out of Murphy's game that's not readily apparent with Newton all the time that gives him the edge to me. And I think that while Newton might be a little bit better of a run defender right now, there's enough there with Murphy, like you said, that should make you feel like you can put that guy at three technique. And we might have, you know, somebody who goes and gets double digit sacks every so often as a defensive tackle.
I kind of slipped in Cincinnati there. I do want to hit on that quickly. I put up a poll about this, Bowers or Murphy, and it was like overwhelmingly Brock Bowers. And I will say, if Brock Bowers is there, I do think he's a really smart pick for Cincinnati, not just because of the need at tight end, but I do think if T. Higgins moves on after this year, is most likely, he can be almost that secondary answer for the Bengals, you know, to Ja'Marr Chase. He can work the middle of the field in a way they need because they face so many split safety looks. He's a great pick. Yeah. That said, if Bowers is, let's say the Colts take him at 15, I would take Murphy if I was the Cincinnati Bengals. I would take him over another pass catcher in the draft. Quietly, not quietly, but like loudly, the Bengals run defense last year was awful. Everybody kind of stopped caring about the Bengals after they lost Joe Burrow. But if we're talking about, okay, we're all in this year. We got T. Higgins back. We want to compete with the Chiefs. You got to stop the run better than you did last season. You lose DJ Reader, who probably your best run defender. This is a glaring need. I know they signed, I think they signed Rankins or someone, but you need better run defense. You need better interior pass rush. To me, I actually think he's like a really good fit for Lou Anarumo's defense. So I would not be... If I'm a Bengals fan and Bowers is off the board, maybe they're considering offensive line, I would see that too. But I would definitely be excited about Byron Murphy because I think he's a really, really talented player. Newton, though, I do want to take a second to give him his flowers. I posted about this. Like, there are just a few games last year that he just took over in a way. Like Penn State, second half Minnesota, Wisconsin. It's just... And I remember actually watching those. I love watching the Illinois defense. I was just like, it's so rare to watch a football game where you can't take your eyes off of a defensive tackle, but he has that quality.
Right. And that's 100% a guy in this class. It's like, if you don't have the all 22 where you can watch from the end zone and really see what he does on a snap to snap basis, you really can't get a picture for all the little nuances in his game that make him so valuable on the interior, right? Like, to me, one of the things that pops out, not just as a pass rusher, but I'll watch him take on double teams. And it's like, oh, you have like a very high understanding of how to use your body, how to take on blocks.
His size, how he uses his size to gain leverage. He's small, but he uses his advantage in such a cool way.
His center of gravity is great. You know, he knows how to disengage. You know, I think I pointed out, you know, in talking with some of our other buddies in the draft space, there's something to him when it turns into, or in terms of converting from a run defender to a pass rusher. that's a very hard thing to do as a defensive tackle. Especially if you're not like a Byron Murphy where you're running a sub 4.940 and you're playing for penetration more often than not. There's a lot of gap control in Newton's game right on the snap. And then, okay, I recognize this play action. I recognize this drop back pass. I can switch modes now and be a game wrecker, you know, as a pass rusher because he has a great arm over. He knows how to work a push and pull. He understands how to work angles as a guy, you know, as a guy over 300 pounds. That's really impressive. Like, there is a lot of little nuances and details in his game that you really have to watch closely to appreciate. And that's, I think, the reason why he was, you know, up until Byron Murphy really broke out, looked at as maybe the best defensive tackle in this class coming into the 2023 season. And I do think a little bit of why we probably don't talk about him as much does come down to him not testing. But like you said, there are so many things that he just checks the boxes on, being powerful, affecting games. When he's on a hot streak, like you said, whether it's a Wisconsin game, the Penn State game, there is not a play that goes by where you don't feel his effect on the interior. And I think that if Murphy is gone earlier, you know, than a team like Cincinnati who needs a defensive tackle, I think you can go get a Newton and feel really, really comfortable with what you're going to get down in and down out in year over year.
I love how you describe his skill set, because the ding on him, other than the lack of testing, will be the size, the physical, yep. You know, and we were talking about the pass rushers and how much that matters when you're talking about a player's upside. For some reason, or not for some reason, I can tell you why, with him, I am less concerned about it. Because of what you described, which is he knows how to maximize his physical tools. He has such an innate understanding of leverage, balance, his hand usage. He does have really good lateral agility, which I think is such an important quality when you're talking about this particular position. So I don't know. I like him a lot. I think if the Rams are there at 19, man, you know, that's a spot for him. I would be thrilled if I was a Rams fan and seeing him land there. All right, let's take a quick break, come back, and talk about the corner safeties and linebackers, mostly the corners.
Why should you bet with Caesars Sportsbook? Two words, Caesars Rewards. Every bet brings you closer to the types of benefits only Caesars can offer. Hotel stays, VIP experiences, sports and concert tickets, and more. It's not just an app. It's an empire. 21 and older must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Maryland, Massachusetts, Michigan, Nevada, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Wyoming, or Washington, D.C. Sports betting is void in Georgia, Hawaii, Utah, and other states where prohibited.
Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Ohio, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harris, Philadelphia. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER, 1-800-426-2537. Or in Maryland, visit mdgamblinghelp.org. West Virginia, visit 1800gambler.net. Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, D.C., Nevada, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through Horseshoe, Bossier City, and Harris, New Orleans. Massachusetts, if you or a loved one is experiencing problems with gambling, please call 1-800-327-5050 or visit gamblinghelplinema.org for 24/7 support. Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. And I have to say, speaking from experience recently, having tried it for the first time in Detroit, it is absolutely delicious. Right now, you can get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Okay, we are back. I'm really excited to have these corners with you because I have found that where I've landed is a little bit different from some of our friends, mm-hmm. which I always get nervous about. Mm-hmm. I don't have Quinyon Mitchell as my CB1. That seems to be kind of the wave that everyone's riding. Yeah. I'm still Terrion Arnold, CB1. I do like Mitchell a lot. And then the other thing where I'm a little off consensus is I think I like Nate Wiggins more than, again, some folks. He's a guy who I feel like has been kind of falling. I don't know where he's being mocked as of late, mm-hmm. but I really liked a lot of his tape. So I want to talk about him. Obviously, DeGene, we can talk about DeGene at the end as like a transition to safety, because obviously right. that's the debate there. But those are kind of my big four. I guess Rake Straw and Mizzou would be a guy who might sneak in. McKinstry right. in Alabama.
McKinstry, yeah.
I have both of them outside that top four. So let's start there. What's your ranking? And then we'll go from there.
Right now I have Quinyon Mitchell at one, but I think it's much closer to like 1-1A between he and Arnold than some people have. I think that now we're seeing more people, I think, kind of really plant their flag, like you said, that Mitchell is certainly the number one corner in this class. I'm not 100% of the way there yet, but I do see the talent that he has and why people will project him out that way. But I have Mitchell and Arnold as 1 and 1A, and then I will probably draw a line there. Say Cooper DeGene is number two, but he is more of a DB hybrid type. Like you said, we'll get to that. But as a pure corner after Arnold and Mitchell, I would have Wiggins after them as well. So I think that we're on the same page
pretty close
in terms of how we're looking at this position.
So the biggest reason behind Mitchell's rise, well, the, you know, people watching Toledo Tape, nobody watches during the, you know, right. thing. Right. That's all of it too, which is, I think, arguably like a pretty big ding on him. Like I could read you, I was grabbing stats and I was like, wow, Quinyon Mitchell, you know, 35% completion percentage, 39.6 rating, which is basically perfect in man coverage, yeah. 15 PBUs, but it's a good, like college stats are just, yeah, but he played in the MAC, you know?
Played in the MAC, you know?
It's tomatoes and oranges. Like, yeah. You know, why did I do tomatoes and oranges and apples and oranges? I don't know, but it's so hard to compare these players with statistics because of that. I will say, though, when you watch him, and there's the famous him versus Marvin Harrison Jr. in the red zone rep, but it's not like he was always going against scrubs or whatnot. But when you watch him, I think the reason why people love him so much is just the athleticism and how that yeah. translates onto tape, the aggression, the ball skills. And then he gets to the combine, he runs an unbelievable 40. And right. it's one of those cases where it's not like the 40 comes out of nowhere and doesn't make any sense. It matches what you see on tape.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I mean, the explosiveness, the suddenness, that always pops when you're watching Mitchell, right? Like you see him come out of his break and it's like, all right, that guy has some legit, you know, a legit 10-yard split. So when he ran that 1.51, I was like, okay, that makes sense, right? A very high end, you know, speed score when you're talking about coming out of a stance, coming out of your breaks, et cetera, right? 38-inch vertical. So you see the explosiveness, you see how he runs as a top end guy. And there's a lot to like there. Right. So that is, I think, what caught a lot of people's attention. And then you think about the Senior Bowl and, you know, everybody's coming out of the Senior Bowl saying, all right, this was by far the top overall player we had there. He played really well against SEC receivers and other Power Five receivers. You have the tape against Marvin Harrison Jr. where he was really, really competitive in it as well. So I understand why he's been such a major riser this late in the process. You like the ball skills, you like the aggression. He is willing to stick his nose in there. He is trying to blow up everybody that he tackles, which I think is always going to be a positive when you're looking at guys at this position. We talk about, you know, the NFL being a lot of condensed splits and running out on the perimeter and a lot of yak, you know, in terms of like underneath throws behind the line of scrimmage. So I think there's a lot to like there with Mitchell. If there's one thing I'm still not 100% sold on, it's like what kind of CB1 is he in this class? Because he doesn't fit the archetype of a Patrick Surtain.
Right? Yeah.
You know, it's not this is like the athletic and physical prototype of a guy who can be at the line of scrimmage, bump and run, the way the Sauce Gardner was, the way the Patrick Surtain II was. I don't know if he's that kind of guy. You can maybe make the argument that he exists a little bit more on the Derek Stingley end of things in terms of like, this is a guy who's versatile. He's got good hips, got good change of direction, pretty sudden. You can maybe mix up looks, you know, with him on your team, and you know that he's going to play with good ball skills and he's going to be productive in that kind of way. And if that's the sales pitch, I think I see it a little bit more.
I think he would be like, so a lot of, so much hinges on what happens with Minnesota, right? And whether they trade up, because they obviously need a cornerback. Assuming they trade up, and let's just say Indianapolis is the highest 15. Again, they might go pass catcher. Mm-hmm. That would make a lot of sense for me. I see him as, I mean, he can definitely play. He can play man mostly off tape. But I see him as like, I would love, I think in like a zone heavy defense. And to your point, like the question is like, okay, well, like then is he a true CB1 if he's not like your prototypical press man?
Right.
It really depends on where he lands. And I think he has the tools to continue developing. He's not for me as fluid as Arnold. And so I think there's just some question marks. There's a little bit of projection there as a result. But yeah, I mean, like he's just, I think the thing I like about him a lot is I would characterize him as having controlled aggression.
Mm-hmm.
He is physical, to your point. He arrives at the, at the ball and he gets his arms in there, but he uses his length without being grabby.
He's not grabby, right?
I think I saw somewhere he like had maybe one or two penalties the entire season, which is something I really like in prospects. So I think you're going to get ball production, especially if he's in a defense where he can play off and have his eyes on the quarterback and bait the quarterback. He is going to come up with the football. So I like that a lot. I think the reason I have a slight preference for Arnold, just to kind of move it to him a little bit, is I see the projection to me is a little bit clearer. And maybe that's because, I don't know, maybe it's because it's Alabama and it's a Nick Saban defense and he's doing all kinds of stuff that I can see him doing at the next level. And he's so scheme versatile. He can play inside, outside, man, zone, press, off. I love his work at the line of scrimmage. I think the other thing I liked about watching him is, you know, McKinstry was the dude coming into this season. And it was just kind of fun to watch Alabama and how obvious it became as the season went on that Arnold was the best corner in their defense, mentally, physically. I feel like he's just super, super polished. He's obviously not Sertan. I don't think, you know, these guys are like at that level by any means, but, if I'm a defensive coordinator, I might like the fact that I could just slot him in right away.
Right. That's where I'm at with Arnold too. To me, the sales pitch for Arnold is that whatever it is that you're looking for out of your number one corner, he has put it on tape. And you've got a lot of tape to go back to as an example. The work at the line of scrimmage that you mentioned, he's, I would say, comfortably the best press corner in this conversation, right? And because you've seen it at Alabama, because you get all these clips of it, you have more to evaluate. So I do think that that's a little bit of it too, right? It's just less projection. And in saying that, that's not to say that I like Arnold because he's safe. That's not what I'm saying. You got a lot of ball production out of him last year that didn't exist before. And I think a lot of that is because of what Kool-Aid McKinstry was in the 2 years prior. Right. Like this was a great opportunity this year for Arnold to show what it looks like, what he looks like when teams are targeting him more. Cause you saw teams throwing less at McKinstry after he was an All-American and had a bunch of picks and ball production. And Arnold was viewed more as a number two, the guy that you can maybe attack a little bit more. To see that level of production at the catch point with the PBUs, with the turnovers, that caught my eye a lot because I didn't know that that was something he could do coming into the year. And then you bring up the versatility. Not only can this be a press corner, he could play in the slot because he's got great change of direction ability. You know, you see him as a blitzer and it's like, all right, you can not just be like a cover one nickel, meaning like this guy's just out here to help us, you know, play tight coverage on passing downs. And we're just playing matchup football. You could really play him wherever you wanted to and get value out of him in several different ways. He can play zone coverage. He's got good eyes. And for that reason, I think that you can pick a guy like Arnold, and while he might not have the same kind of athletic upside that a Mitchell has, the chances are that's going to be a solid corner no matter where you put him for a long, long time. I think with Mitchell, it's a little bit more of like, we see enough on tape and got enough out of the athletic testing to make us believe that maybe this guy could be like an AJ Terrell, you know, a guy who maybe we didn't see all of what we saw in the pros in his Clemson tape, but we knew that athletically he would be capable of doing it once he got to the league. Arnold is a little bit more polished and somebody that I would like to have if I was looking for more your prototypical CB1 type of archetype.
Let me throw out an idea. This won't happen because they have such another glaring need, I think, and I just don't think they'll do it. But if you're Brett Veach and you're picking at 32, if you could trade up and it would cost you an extra second because you're not moving into it. Let's say Mitchell goes 15, maybe the Jags at 17 are the next corner spot. So Seattle's on the phone. The way you're describing Terrion Arnold.
Sounds like the guy they just lost.
Such a natural replacement for Legarius. Yeah. I'm not saying he's exactly like Legarius Sneed, but a lot of what we're talking about, the inside-outside versatility, the press man ability, the blitzing ability even, the aggression. He's so good against the run.
Great tackler.
It would be such a good fit for that defense.
I agree. I think that the team that I've mocked Arnold to more often than not is Jacksonville, because I've just made up in my mind, like, they just need more defensive players that are known commodities coming into the league, right? They've taken a lot of projects, a lot of developmental guys, a lot of raw athletes. So I've kind of wanted to see Jacksonville get a guy who's a little bit more proven in that sense. But if a team like Kansas City, if a coach like Steve Spagnuolo could get his hands on someone as versatile as Arnold, that would be pretty spooky.
All right, let's talk about Cooper DeJean. Let's have this conversation.
Yeah.
It's an important conversation, and I'm glad we're having it. Put up the Charles Barkley, it's time to have a conversation.
Yes, it's time for a dialogue.
All right, it's time to start a dialogue. It's so hard because on one hand, it's kind of like when you reach for cross-racial comps, like the Daryl Morey, like you don't want to say this dude should play safety. Like, on one hand, let me walk you through my thinking. I watch him and I think he could play corner in the NFL.
Yes.
I really do. Scheme dependent. I don't think, you know, it's going to be a very man centric defense. Mm-hmm. Definitely you want him in a very zone heavy defense, but I fully believe that because of his athleticism, the anticipation, his understanding of routes, the way he plays the football, Cooper DeJean could be a good corner in the NFL. My question is, though, could he be a great safety?
Yeah.
And I think that's the question that teams will be asking.
That was a conversation I had with every NFL person I could get in front of when I was in Indianapolis for the combine, because I couldn't understand why all of them were just certain, shoulder shrugged, shoo-shoo, not even having this talk. This guy is a safety. And I'm like, wait. Like, you guys don't think that there's any value in
really?
That corner at all? So many teams that I talk to seem so certain that, like, yeah, this guy's going to come in the league, he's going to play slot, and he's going to be a safety. And I'm like, okay, not that he is not capable of being great at those two things. In fact, if I was projecting out, you know, best outcomes for him, those would be the two positions I would probably argue is where his highest upside is, because of how versatile he is, because of the twitchiness, the athleticism, the change of direction, the comfort in zone coverage, the discipline, the tackling, a lot of the things we said about Terrion Arnold, I think apply to DeJean as well. And then you have how dynamic he is when it comes to playing the ball, you know, being a playmaker. I have viewed him as a corner throughout this entire process. And him being a safety would be more of a team, to me, that already has something established at corner. That's when I think it makes sense to move him. So when we bring up Seattle, if you already have Tariq Woolen, you already have Devin Witherspoon in the slot or as your move around guy, there's a lot of sense, I would say, for a Cooper DeJean to come in and play safety and really be a primary safety. I get that part. But if you're a team like Jacksonville, if you're a team like Indianapolis, who's still looking to hit big time on corner, I still think that should be part of the conversation for a player like this. Especially, like you said, if you're going to a team that's going to give you a lot of zone coverage and really allow him to play through his eyes and instincts, because I do think that he has the best traits when it comes to playing the ball, playing with great instincts of any corner in this class.
What if your team like Philadelphia at 22, where you have two aging corners, so you could play safety, then you could see, you could work him, you could play different positions. You brought back Gardner Johnson. You will have two white safeties.
I was going to say, I support it just for the visual of seeing a team starting two white safeties. I was talking to Ben Solak about it. And I was like, if they give up the same amount of explosive offense that they did last year, but this time it's with two white safeties,
That will set back race relations.
Eagles fans are going to be very problematic about it.
I might be problematic about it. I will. Yeah, we as a nation will be taking.
I don't know if we're prepared for that.
He would be really good, though. He'd be really good in that defense, Vic.
I agree.
Oh, okay. I do want to hit Wiggins briefly because I think the reason why we don't have to beat him the bush. He's freaking skinny.
You see, and I love that we're having this conversation because we literally did this a year ago with Emmanuel Forbes.
And that, and I actually think that's scaring people off of him because Forbes has struggled so much and I was too high on Forbes and it's making me nervous.
And I'm a total hypocrite because when we talked about it, the first thing out of my mouth was like, no, he's too skinny. That's not a good corner. You can't be that tiny and play corner. And then I watched Nate Wiggins and I'm like, the speed, man. He's a real man coverage guy. I kind of like to draw that comparison to differentiate the two as prospects. Emmanuel Forbes was a ball jumper, right? That's a guy who he's a route jumper, 100%. He's always in off coverage.
Pick sixes, yeah.
Exactly. Always playing zone, jumping routes. Everybody knew that the tackling was going to be an issue coming in. Everybody knew that he was pretty limited in terms of how much else he could do defensively outside of playing off coverage and jumping routes. With Wiggins, you're getting a little bit more of a complete corner when it comes to technique, when it comes to versatility, when it comes to the ability to play different ways in coverage, when it comes to, you know, his mind for the game in terms of football IQ. I think that Wiggins is ahead of him in a lot of those aspects. The issue is just like, 170 pounds is 170 pounds at a certain point, you know, I'm always going to have questions of durability at that size. That's a tall, lanky dude. You look at body builds, like, I don't want to sound like a phrenologist, but these skinny dudes playing NFL football, man, I get really, really worried about long-term durability in a league where teams are, you know, giving you perimeter run more than ever.
That is my
guys
concern.
To play out in space more than ever. It's tough.
It's hard because, too, I'm looking at my notes from watching him. I kept writing physicality because he actually plays with a lot of strength.
Yes.
When he flies in to make a hit, he wants to put the pain on
exactly.
them. There was a hit he put on Leggett versus South Carolina that I clipped and I like couldn't believe how hard he hit him, just flying across the field and blowing up screens, and he gets his nose in there. So he isn't weak. It's not like he gets pushed around by bigger receivers either. The problem is more against the run. I'm actually less worried about it versus the receivers than in run defense. And I think that's where it's going to be an issue. To your point, I just hate it because there's so much I like on his tape. I think he's really, really polished. He can press. He has a good understanding of routes. He uses the sideline well. There's that unbelievable play versus UNC where he runs down.
Pokes a ball out.
I mean, God, as a defensive coach, how do you not see that and like not want that man on your football team?
100%.
So electric.
That physicality you pointed out, when I was watching him play against Florida State, and this was on a TV copy, and that's, you know, Johnny Wilson, 6'7", Keon Coleman, 6'4". These are both 200-plus-pound guys, and he's in their chest for a lot of that game and causing a lot of problems at the catch point and really being competitive. And that told me, to the point that you're making, like, this is not a guy who's shying away from anything. No. This is not a finesse player. This is not a guy that I need to be concerned about in terms of willingness. I think that the concern is really just like, again, at that size, despite how explosive and fast he is, and we can't lose sight of the fact that he ran sub-4.3 and pulled his hamstring at the end of the run. So God only knows what the time would have been if he was able to run it, you know, all the way through the way that he wanted to. I think that I just get concerned because this is the archetype of a corner that would have been really attractive back in the two-back offense.
Yeah.
Defense is just playing cover one all the time. You don't have to worry about your corner being involved in the run game. So now, in today's NFL, I don't know if I'm as comfortable, despite how good he is, with such a narrow band of outcomes in terms of things that I would be pleased with for him as a pro player.
Especially Seattle's running this a little bit with Woolen.
Exactly.
It's a real thing, the way these types of offenses attack corners in the run game. I do want to give a quick shout to one of my favorite players in the draft, Mike Sandersill. He's Mike Hilton.
Short king.
That's all you got to know. He's Mike Hilton.
Yeah.
He literally is Mike Hilton. Like, I just, the blitzing, the slot play, the twitch, the all, I mean, he's like Mighty Mouse flying around the field. Some coach is just going to absolutely love him.
Yes. And the best thing about a guy like Sanders still is, for all the hemming and hawing about size, like, because he's going to be off a lot of teams' boards because of size, that just makes him more likely to land on a team that's going to play him, just like a Mike Hilton would be played. And you're going to get maximum value out of a guy like that. I love Sanders still as a player.
Okay, you're good. I'm glad I'm not alone on Sanders still Island. Are there any other corners you love before we move on to the linebackers and safeties?
Love, I wouldn't say so. There are some guys that I would probably take some swings on, maybe, you know, towards the end of day two. Cam Hart, Kyrie Jackson, big body guys, long arm, physical players. Like, to me, I look at like a Kyrie Jackson and I'm like, sir, you are an Indianapolis Colt. 6'3", over 200 pounds, ran a good 40, long arms. He's Gus Bradley's dream.
He's like the guy they took, I forget his name, Brents.
Julius Brents, yes. Yeah. Like, you fit that old, you know, Seattle cover three archetype perfectly. But yeah, I would say that those are guys that I would maybe take a swing on. TJ Tampa's a guy who can probably play inside and out. Andrew Phillips is another guy like that from Kentucky who fits that mold. And then you mentioned Ennis Rakestraw. So these are all guys who are either a little undersized or maybe not top-end athletes. In a way that would project out to play like as a number one corner on the outside all the time. But these are guys that I think can play pretty well and should be useful for NFL defenses.
So no linebackers will go in the first round, although I would have said that about Jack Campbell last year. So, you know, who knows? Right. I think the way I would phrase this for both linebackers and safeties, let's do linebackers, is could any of them go in the second round, right? I'll be full disclosure. I've only watched three that I feel like I have real exposure on them. Peyton Wilson out of NC State, who I talked about a few weeks ago for the combine. Edrin Cooper, Texas A&M, and then Junior Colson, Michigan, just, you know, part of my Michigan watch. Yeah. I don't know if I have a preference. I think.
There's some to like, not a lot to love well, in this position.
If Wilson was 2 years younger and healthy, I think I would actually say I think he's the best prospect. He is, to me, the best cover corner of the group. But if you're doing an upside play, guy that you don't need to start year one, I understand the case for probably going with Colson or Cooper. They're both good against the run. They're both good tacklers. They're both smart. Well, actually, Colson's a little bit, I think, more polished in that regard. Cooper's more of the athlete. I think so. That's probably where you'd want to go is, I think, like, are you prioritizing the athleticism of Cooper, or do you like sort of the fact that Colson's a little bit more pro ready in my estimation?
I mean, those are the three. I think those are the three worth having your eye on if you're a fan of a team that has a need for linebacker. I know you and I have talked about this before in terms of just like development arc being so much longer now at the position. Yeah. I think Patrick Queen was such a perfect example of that, right? Obviously helped by having Roquan Smith as a teammate, but you look at what he was in the college level, great downhill player, good tackler out in space, could play in coverage a little bit. And then he gets to the pros and you put all of the stress of having to play things vertically, you know, more spread offenses, you know, having to go make one-on-one tackles more often, while also having the threat of the run game, and it looked like the guy was just drowning in all the responsibility so often. I think that that's just going to be an issue at this position going forward. And to me, that's been a big hang up for me with Peyton Wilson. Like, I look at Peyton Wilson a lot of times and I'm like, isn't this just Drew Sanders again? In terms of like a guy who's a very good raw athlete, very twitchy, can cover. I don't want to undersell him as a coverage player. He's a better coverage player
in coverage
than Drew Sanders was. Yeah. But I look at him and I'm like, there's part of me that just wants to say, put on 20 pounds and rush the passer, my friend. You know, when I watch him try to take on blocks, you know, as an off-ball linebacker, I get really concerned. I don't see the same kind of pop in his pads and in taking on blocks and controlling them that I see in a Junior Colson, right? Who does not have the athletic upside of either, I think, Edrin Cooper or Peyton Wilson. But you look and it's like, that's how linebacker is played at the pro level, right? There's so many one-to-one, you know, snap-to-snap comparisons you can make to what happens at the NFL level, right? That's a lot of like Nick Bolton is kind of what I see in Junior Colson, kind of like a do everything type, you know, jack of all jack of all trades, master of none, but you know he's going to be a solid tackler, and you can keep him on the field, and he can do a lot of different things. Edgerrin Cooper, to your point, is a good, you know, downhill athlete. That's a guy that's like, you can believe in your heart of hearts that you can make a good coverage player out of that guy. We just don't see that happen very often at this position anymore, right? Is guys who are better downhill than moving backwards turning into good coverage players once they get into the NFL. So it's two projects athletically and then one guy who probably has the lowest ceiling of the group, which is why Junior Colson has been my favorite linebacker, just because it's such a clean and clear evaluation for me and projection. But I wouldn't be mad at any team that took Edgerrin Cooper and said, we can maybe make that into a star linebacker. Mm. Peyton Wilson's the guy I think that I'm probably a little too like Isaiah Simmons scarred by to into all the way.
Cooper's the one you look at and you think maybe he could be queen for us, where he flies around and he's super athletic.
Great tackler.
If you pair him with like a really good Mike who can. But it's going to take, I think all these guys is going to take some time. Safety, I actually think of pretty similarly, where there's three players who I think it's the same conversation, which of these guys is going to go in the second round. So we're not including Coop, Newbin, who you mentioned, Minnesota, 6'2", 200 pounds, really nice size. Javon Bullard is a guy who I've watched a fair amount of at Georgia. He's a really interesting player, I think, smaller, kind of probably similar in size to like CJ Gardner-Johnson, who he has a lot of similarities to as a player. And then Jaden Hicks at Washington State is the other player I think you could see going in the top as the first safety. I think it's going to come down to what a team wants, like what profile of safety they want. Let's just start there. Of those three, is there a guy who's like your guy, or do you think a clear number one?
I'm going to go with Newbin because I do think a lot of the nitpicking I've done with Newbin has kind of been prospect fatigue because I've been watching him play safety. And I think that people have kind of known that he's a solid safety throughout his college career. That's probably the guy that you can drop in, and exactly what you see on tape at the college level is probably going to show up at the NFL level. Is he going to be a rangy middle of field type of guy? No. Right.
I don't think any of these guys are.
Yeah, I would agree with that too. But you know, if you want a guy who can do a few different things, you know, match up with tight ends, it's probably not going to be an eraser, more of a zone coverage guy. Maybe you want to move him closer to the line of scrimmage when you want to play your big nickel package. And that I actually think that applies to almost every safety in this class, is that you probably feel better about them playing as like your Sam Backer big nickel type than you do deep in the middle of the field for the top three guys you mentioned. But I think that Newbin probably has the best ball skills. Had the best ball production, you know, of this group, I would say, over his career. And I think that that is kind of like a high floor, low ceiling pick. If you ask me who my favorite to watch has been of those three, it's probably Jaden Hicks, just because of that kind of reckless abandon, the length, the size, right? The tackling out in space. I look at a guy like that and I'm like, okay, I see Kirkland Brand, Kyle Hamilton in you. You know, I see a lot of the movement skills and the size and the, you know, that kind of intermediate range and blitzing off an edge. I could see a team, you know, bringing you in and saying, we're going to play you, you know, as maybe our big nickel slot. And then you can play, you know, strong safety over tight ends for us in a pinch if we need to.
I don't know, but I like Newbin probably the best personally. I don't know. Bullard's a scrapper. I mean, I mentioned CJ.
Yeah.
Once you see that, you start really liking it because you kind of project that, but he's smaller. Newbin, you mentioned the ball skills, a lot of all the on-ball production, and it's not cheap production.
Yes.
A lot of it is interceptions. Like he's not just a right place, right time kind of guy. He's really good at reading quarterbacks, which I think is, to your point, why he has like a pretty high floor in the NFL. I think there's some, no pun intended, safety there, because it's like, you know, split field, very easy to imagine him. You can drop into the box. He's a good tackler. He's not like, he doesn't have the range of like a truly, at least not yet. I don't know. But again, I don't really think any of these guys do.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it'll take a second, but, it's not the best class.
Not the sexiest class up the spine of the defense, man. It's really not.
All right, we got through it. I think my big takeaway is the defensive line. There's some good players. Corners, we'll see. I don't think there's an obvious like Sauce Gardner, Sertan type, but I do like the top corners a lot. Mm-hmm. And finally, Cooper DeJean, if you play safety for Philadelphia, we might as a society be headed for some pretty uncomfortable discussions. Or he could be the next great one.
Two starting white safeties in an election year. What could go wrong?
Oh my god. Yeah, Deontay, this was really great. Thank you as always. Folks, you can follow him on Twitter at Deontay Lee FB. Always check out his work. It's so thoughtful. You're so good at covering these guys. I'll have to have you back on at some point. Maybe we'll do our trying to figure out the top 10 defenses. I can't remember if I had some misses last year. Had some hits. I had the Ravens.
I don't remember how I did last year. I don't remember how
I think I left out the Browns, which was a miss. But yeah, in any case, thank you as always for joining. You guys can check this podcast out on YouTube at youtube.com/@MinaKimes. You can also check it out ad-free on Amazon Music. Very exciting. And thank you, of course, to our great producers at Omaha Production, Kristen Specky, Anthony Jimenez, Owen Saylor, Doing Social. And next week is the draft. Crazy. Wow.